You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN97.5.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the RentersWarehouse.com studios, here's Glenn Davis.
Special mention to C.S. Smith too, because he brings me here when I spend time playing in Columbus Crew. I want to say thank you very much. He was very important for me when I came here, not just for soccer things. He helped me a lot of things and human things. So I want to say thank you very much, C.S. Smith.
Hey, soccer fans, I have a new sponsor to Soccer Matters, Tri-Eagle Energy, as we welcome you back. There's synergy with their energy because they're also the official energy provider of the Houston Dynamo, Houston Dash, and BBVA Compass Stadium. So let's talk energy. There are a lot of energy providers out there, and there's always different offers ranging from free weekends, free days, cash bonuses, and you know, the list goes on. Now, you may have fallen for one of these offers, and months later you find out you're paying a higher rate or there are additional fees on your bill. It's different with Tri-Eagle Energy. They keep it simple. The rate you see is the rate you pay. No gimmicks, no minimum usage fees, no charges if you go over a certain amount of electricity. Check out Tri-Eagle Energy. Call 877-93-EAGLE or log on to TriEagleEnergy.com. Use promo code ESPN for an additional discount. TriEagleEnergy.com, promo code ESPN. With that, we bring in a former Houston area youth product. Played in Major League Soccer for a number of teams, including the LA Galaxy under Ziggy Schmidt. He's Josh Gardner. Josh, thank you very much for coming on. Happy holidays to you.
Happy holidays, Glenn. Thanks for having me.
All right. How was it with the family? Good holidays?
Great, man. I mean, the four kids had a great Christmas. Obviously, the grandparents came in and lavished the kids with a bunch of gifts, so mom and dad didn't have to do too much, which was great.
Well, listen, I'm glad you had a good one. The Gardner family is a great family. So let's get into the first thing I really want to talk to you tonight. Sadly, Ziggy Schmidt passing away. Just an absolute icon in soccer in this country. From the college game at UCLA, under-20 national team, all the way into Major League Soccer, winning titles in places like Los Angeles and Columbus. You came out of college, Nike Project 40. You were at Cincinnati. And Ziggy Schmidt picked you up with the LA Galaxy. Do you have some thoughts on Ziggy's passing first? And then let's get into a little bit about him that maybe the normal listener won't know about.
Well, yeah, I mean, the first news or first time I heard of the news, my wife actually called me and said, hey, did you hear about Ziggy's passing? And I think my wife knew that Ziggy was somebody special in my life as a coach. Obviously, he took a chance on me and going through all the Instagram accounts of all the former players who have played underneath Ziggy, I think all the players kind of had the same feelings. I mean, he was one of those guys who was about family, was about, you know, developing young players and instilling in them the tools necessary to last as long as we could in the game. And for him to, you know, to essentially draft me in the MLS Super Draft, and I'm not sure how much he knew about me, but knowing that I was left-footed and he could work with me, he took a chance, and it was a special moment and one that I'll always be grateful for him.
He's Josh Gardner joining us now, currently in Houston with Albion Hurricanes, doing a lot of youth development work here in our city, and grew up playing on the fields here, which we always note when Josh comes on the show. All right, so Adidas, Generation Adidas is what it's called now. Back then it was Nike Project 40. When Ziggy Schmidt gets you in, what are some of the first things he tells you as a young player in Los Angeles?
Well, I think the first thing I remember is obviously going to Home Depot Stadium and just being around the atmosphere. Obviously, Ziggy brought in quite a few influential players. Andreas Herzog was there. You had guys like Ryan Suarez, obviously Landon Donovan, Carlos Ruiz, those guys who really were the core of the team. But he also surrounded himself with some German influence, right? He brought in Jurgen Klinsmann to do some work with us as well. And, you know, Ziggy, one of the first things he did was you got to learn from the older players, and you have to basically listen to them and kind of take your stripes and you know, work underneath them and understand how they work as a pro. And it was one of the greatest experiences of my life.
Josh Gardner joining us here, Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5. All right, so what type of manager was he? Autocratic, democratic? Was he a yeller? What were his halftime team talks like? Take us into a little bit of that Ziggy, in action.
Yeah, no, he was one of those guys. Obviously, he was German, right? So he was he could be loud when he needed to, but he also demanded respect and he demanded discipline. And one of the moments in my head that I'll never forget is we were playing in an exhibition match, a preseason game. I was playing on the far left side from where the benches were, and Siggy literally walked around the entire field and pulled me off and was giving me instructions and basically telling me what I needed to do better. And it was one of those moments where I think he understood me as a player, as a guy who needed not necessarily yelling at him to get the most out of me, but to put his arm around my shoulder and say, hey, listen, this is what you need. And I think he understood the players that he had. He could get on to Landon Donovan because he knew Landon was going to work even harder. He was gentle when he needed to be, but you know, he was one of those coaches who, I mean, had a lot of success with the teams that he's put on the field, and you know, he demanded that respect and that discipline from all the players that he had, and it was obviously a great experience and fun to be around. The locker room was a lot of fun, and actually halfway through that year, I believe we were in first place, and he actually I don't know what happened, but we brought in a new coach that year, and I don't know the ins and outs of it, but you know, Siggy, his last day with us was obviously emotional, and we were emotional as well because he was like for the rookies at least, he was that father figure in the game for us. So those were those moments that were pretty hard on us.
He's Josh Gardner joining us here on Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5, reflecting on Ziggy Schmidt. And just to kind of back up what you said, Josh, it was amazing the testimony coming in from players and coaches and all. And I think the one thing I love about Ziggy is that, you know, he's done it at all levels. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. The youth level, UCLA, onto the pro game. You know, the one feather in the cap that I think he always desired and he didn't get was the full national team manager. But the success and the differing types of teams he had. Tactically, what did you like about him? And do you have a moment where tactically he, in a locker room at halftime, changed the game and that stands out to you?
Oh man, Glenn, that was ages ago, to be honest. I remember he was traditional 4-4-2. I think that was probably the playing style that most teams played at that time. I didn't see a lot of minutes that first year, or the first, you know, 6 or 7 months that I played for Siggy. It was really just sitting on the bench and watching and learning. That first year, I think maybe I got 15 minutes, but, you know, the most came out of the training session. So a lot of times when we would train, he would put teams together based on playing experience. So there were times where we would have three teams and it would be a world team, it would be the veterans, and then it'd be the rookies. And like, we were literally fighting for every single, opportunity. And I remember, one particular training session, he knew that I needed to work on heading. One of those things that I think it's a skill that not a lot of youth kids are good at. And here I am as a first-year pro, and Siggy's driving balls at me from the halfway line, and I'm trying to clear him out 30, 40 yards. That's what he wanted. And, you know, he was one of those coaches that, you know, put the work in where it needed to be. And I remember going up 50-50 challenge with Danny Califf, who was probably a foot taller than me. And I actually out-jumped him and won the header. And Siggy basically stopped training and was like, that's what I'm talking about, you know. So it wasn't necessarily a tactical thing during the year. I think for the most part, I want to say, if I'm not mistaken, we were in first place at the time that Siggy moved on and they brought in a new coach. I'm not sure why, but, you know, like I said, we played in that 4-4-2 and he had all the players moving the way he wanted to. And it was just, you know, one of those moments where I just had to sit back and learn.
Yeah, and if you outjumped Danny Califf once, that's good enough for me, because Danny Califf was very good in the air, very good central defender, also out of UCLA. And, of course, Siggy had the ties to UCLA. But, you know, the thing that I always liked about him with media, he was just so open. He was always made himself available, maybe a little bit less in Seattle just because the whole media blew up there with the sizable fan base that they had and the attention they were getting. But always excellent. I also was testament to him, the way he put the team together in Columbus that won a title with, you know, Alejandro Moreno as a holding target striker, and then Guillermo Barros-Schelotto, who now has come back to the league to coach the Galaxy, ironically, as the playmaker in midfield. So pretty fond of that. What about off the field? Was he a kind of guy that maybe would joke with the team? Would he kind of keep his distance? What was he like with the team in that regard?
No, he was, you know, we would literally go out to training 30 to 45 minutes early before training started, and we would play small-sided, and Siggy would be out there playing with us, and it was like one of those things where you're like, aren't we supposed to, you know, prepare for training and save our energy and then go train? But, you know, he allowed us to, you know, experience the game in different ways. I remember playing just, you know, crazy games like of kickball with some of the guys on the team. So that was the locker room we had. And I think, what I remember most is every week we always got together as a team after training and went to a little local German, restaurant, and we would eat, together as a group. And, you know, he was very much about family and community, and you know, those are qualities and things that I'll never forget, and things that I try and bring into my coaching style, and my development with players in the Houston area.
He's Josh Gardner reflecting on Siggy Schmidt. So let me switch it a little bit to youth and player development now. You know, what are the main things you're doing, in the youth game now, and how has it maybe changed as an inspirational leader out there for kids? What's most important when you walk up to a training session with young kids these days?
Well, I think the most part is being, in a sense, getting on their level, right? Because I think a lot of players, they have these mindsets of, I want to be pro, I want to be pro, I want to be pro, but they don't understand how to get to those levels or taking those steps to get there. And, you know, I have young kids who are playing soccer now, and, you know, I work with them on the technical side, but then working with players who, you know, go from club season to high school season, which is very much important to them as players, not necessarily from a technical or tactical development for them, but it's about playing in front of their peers, right, and enjoying the game. And I think that's important as well. But, you know, walking up to a training session and making sure that the players come and shake your hand and create that type of environment where, listen, we're at the end of the day, we're in this together, and it's my job just as much as your job as a player to succeed and to excel in the things that you need to get better at, and to give them that vision and that hope that it's attainable, but you have to put the work in.
How much time do you spend trying to get these kids to create their own environments at home? Do you think they're playing enough at home on their own and doing things on their own without an adult, without a coach, which is so essential to sort of counter your training sessions with them? I mean, if they're not playing the game on their own, if they're not with the ball pretty regularly at home, it's not going to happen, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's special situations, I would say. I mean, you watch Christian Pulisic and see the things that he did as a kid, being in goal, I believe, and then dribbling, you know, catching the ball and dribbling all the way through. He couldn't do that based out of pure talent, right? So he obviously had a dad who loved the game and worked with him, and just gave him those opportunities to just go enjoy the game. With my boys at home, we have 45 soccer balls in the backyard with two goals, and they're playing constantly. But I don't know if players, obviously I think players at the early ages enjoy the game, but once they start to get a little bit older, it's, I have to go to training 3 days a week. It's not, I want to go to training 3 days a week and I want to do more on my own. And I think that's where maybe the part where they don't understand what it takes to get to that next level is putting the work in on your own and watching games and understanding and enjoying it and playing more games. I think right now we drive up to Dallas, a 3.5 hour drive, play a 90 minute game and then drive another 3.5 hours. It doesn't make sense for players to have to do that. And I think we need to create more local games for the players to really learn that development is not only about the technical and the tactical, but obviously once you learn those things, you have to go out and you have to show what you've learned in training sessions. So yeah, I'm hoping our players, you know, work on their own and we challenge them and we give them homework to do. But at the end of the day, it's up to them.
So one thing I want to backtrack that you said was they get older and practice becomes laborious to them. Why do you think that is? Is it because of long trips and not playing locally? And I mean, I'm stunned sometimes the amount of travel these teams are doing. And I understand why it's done. It's marketing. Yes, it's some competition as well. But back to Christian Pulisic, he wasn't doing any of that. He was playing on a local team in his area. He wasn't doing all this travel everywhere. And I know everybody's got to do the travel to keep up with the Joneses because there is a piece of marketing in there as well. If said club is going to Chelsea, well, we better be going to Chelsea or United or maybe taking a trip to Barcelona. And you know, potentially people are making money off this stuff. So what do you think it is when kids get older? Why isn't the desire being accelerated at that point? Why isn't the game becoming even more exciting to them?
No, that's a, you know, honestly, Glenn, if I knew that, I would probably be a rich man. You know, you're always trying to figure out the little things that go on in players' minds. I mean, every age group that you work with, you know, there's maybe more talent. And then in some age groups, there's not enough talent, but there's a lot of hardworking players. I think once they get a little bit older, they start going to middle school, high school, grades or schoolwork becomes a little bit more difficult. And, you know, grades are very much important to us as coaches because we want our players to be smart and to work hard on the grading side or the schooling side. But, you know, then they get out to us and they're exhausted, right? They've spent how many hours in school that day, and then they have maybe an hour or two before they have to come out to training. Mentally, they're not there. And once high school season starts for soccer players, it's even more difficult. But the Houston area is so big, it's hard for players. And we have a lot of good players that can't drive an hour and a half to training, and we don't want them to do that. I think it's important that they stay closer to their environment, to their group, so that they can hopefully enjoy the field more.
Yeah, it's a difficult problem because it seems it's almost about endurance sometimes as opposed to quality. If you put yourself back in the days when you were in the Hurricanes soccer club locally, and you look at some of the age groups that were around you, you guys had relationships with players on older teams and younger teams. There was a lot of that going on. How different are the players now? Are the players as good? Is there any sort of compare and contrast you can do?
Well, I mean, we didn't, you know, growing up in the 90s and playing, we didn't have access to YouTube, to these, you know, websites where we could learn skills or watch players whenever we wanted to. We had to actually go out and work on our game and learn by making mistakes. And you know, growing up and only training twice a week, and having to figure out how to do more on our own you know, to work at our craft and our talent, you know, it was upon us. And I see now that players see it as, I only have to do 3 days a week, and those 3 days are going to be what it's going to take for me to play at a higher level. And it's tricky, right? But, you know, I remember growing up as a 10, 11, 12-year-old and going out and watching our U18s play because of the way that they played. And we had some very, you know, talented players who went on to win national championships at UConn. And watching them play, it gave – I mean, we were at the fields all day watching games. And as you were one of my former coaches growing up at that time, I mean, I remember you guys always being out there, and you allowed us to sit on the sideline with the players and watch games next to you as you were coaching. So it was creating that environment and that community and that family that, you know, allowed us to continue to fight for that hunger that we had.
Josh, thank you very much for your time, your expertise. We appreciate the comments on Ziggy, and continue all the good work in the youth community, because it's important that guys like you are grabbing the mantle and going with it. You've got the energy, you got the insight, you got the experience. Keep it up. People are proud of local Houstonians like yourself who've come back here to contribute to the game. Thank you.
Thanks, Glenn. Thanks for having me.
All right, that's Josh Gardner, Albion Hurricanes, but played for the LA Galaxy under Ziggy Schmidt, Sporting Kansas City as well. Outstanding career, now doing it in the youth game. Hope you enjoyed that interview with Josh. Moment here for our presenting sponsor, the Daspit Law Firm. John and his firm are personal injury attorneys. They bring a personalized approach. It's DaspitLaw.com, 713-322-HURT. Now, they're bilingual. Whether you get in a car accident, motorcycle, industrial, construction, look, you don't want to. These things happen, though, and you need representation. Who knows? You might work at a plant or a refinery. You might drive an 18-wheeler. The Daspit Law Firm, John Daspit and his firm, they have you covered. They're going to work for you 24/7, nights and weekend. Get the representation you need. Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. Tremendous presenting sponsors of this show, and we appreciate the Daspit Law Firm and their support of soccer and Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. Take a break. More to come. Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5.
Listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the RentersWarehouse.com studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. With that, we bring on the managing director of On Target Football Consultants. He is in England. He is Rob Moore. And we're really, really excited to have him on the program. Not a guy that you get the opportunity to interview. So, Rob, thank you very much for giving us the opportunity here on the program.
My pleasure, Glenn. No problem.
Now, Rob has a number of players placed in Europe, a lot in the German Bundesliga, and one that everybody listening to the show knows, in Christian Pulisic at Dortmund, Haji Wright at Schalke, to name a few, Isaiah Young at Werder Bremen. I'm so interested to talk to you about the process with Christian and how it happened, how you made the connection, and then how you assessed him, how he assessed you, and then how he gets to Dortmund.
Yeah, well, basically it goes back to quite a while back where Greg Peterson, who does work for my company in the U.S., Greg's based in Florida, and he'd been tracking Christian for quite some time when I think he was already about 12 or 13 years old, and really been monitoring his progress. And it came to a trip that Christian was part of. I think it was the ID2 program, where he came to Europe with a team to play against FC Barcelona. And at that time, my company was based in Spain. And in Barcelona, and one of my staff members went out to watch Christian play against Barcelona in that particular age group. And he came back to us and gave the report back that, well, the best player on the field, fantastic talent. And, you know, from then on, we obviously followed his progress and made contact with him, made contact with his dad, And then it was at a tournament in Turkey when Christian was playing for the U17s of the 1998 cycle, 1998 born cycle that they played in a tournament in Turkey. I think it was in January 2014. There were a number of scouts and clubs that were there that we were interacting with. And Dortmund was one of them. Scout of Dortmund, Volker Popper, came to me afterwards after a couple of the games and said to me, wow, that's a fantastic talent, blah, 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 blah. And from there, we were, you know, able to put the club in contact with Christian and really help him set up something that ended up being as special as it is today, you know. And, obviously it was, he had great fortune in being able to get his Croatian passport, which, you know, Dortmund, through their connections, helped the application get over the finish line, so to speak, so that he could be registered. And, his progress was exceptionally rapid, you know.
So what was the thing about Dortmund that made you think that this is the right fit for Christian? Because, you know, that's the other part of your job, is you want to put the player in an environment where it's going to accelerate his development and be a good fit for him.
Yeah, well, they've got very, very good youth teams. And the coach at the time of the U17 was a coach by the name of Hannes Wolf. And Hannes, he's an extraordinarily good young coach. Germany is blessed with having this new generation of coaches, whether it be Nagelsmann at Hoffenheim, whether it be Tedesco at Schalke, whether it be Keenan at Sandhausen, or Hannes Wolf, who's now a coach at Stuttgart. And a young, up-and-coming coach for Stuttgart first team. You know, Germany is really, I'd say, much more than England, producing this next wave of young, highly talented coaches. And all these guys started off doing youth football. I mean, a guy like Domenico Tedesco, who's the Schalke coach, and who's now led Schalke to being back up in the Champions League places this season, in the Bundesliga table. Domenico, a little while ago, I think it was maybe only two seasons ago, was the under-19 coach at Hoffenheim. And then he went on to do one season with a second division club called Auer, very small club in the German second division. And then he was appointed the Schalke coach of the season and has done a wonderful job. So it's an environment that Germany more than England at this stage, for sure, and probably even more than Spain, I would say, is a league that is being influenced greatly by this new generation of young coaches, and they are giving young players the opportunity to put their marker in the sand and say, this is what I can do, and if you give me a chance.
He's wrong.
And it's been fantastic.
He's Rob Moore, the managing director of On Target Football Consultants. We're talking about Christian Pulisic, the U.S. international, also plays at Dortmund. It seems like Germany and the Bundesliga are very interested in the American player. Am I correct to say that? Or what is it about the connection with the Bundesliga and the young American player now?
Well, there's a couple of things. Number one, I think they like the mentality, generally speaking, of the American players. The players are pretty mature and they're prepared to work hard and try to reach their goals, and they can learn. They can learn quickly. So they're coachable. So I think that appeals to the German clubs. Obviously, the players have to be a certain technical level and fit all the various criteria, of course. The other important thing, which I don't think people in America really understand, and they don't understand the implications of what a certain group is going down a certain road and how it's going to affect American soccer, is that right now You know the whole debate about no training and development compensation being payable to American clubs by law, by U.S. law. So therefore, America has a unique position because the clubs in Europe look at this situation and they say, okay, we can take this player at 18 years old from America. It's a risk because he's never played outside of America before. But there's not a lot of barrier to entry, so let's give him a chance. Let's take a chance on it. And if it's not going to work, it's not going to cost too much money to make a mistake. Now, as you know, there's a group who's lobbying to get paid training and development compensation and blah, 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 blah. As soon as that comes in, you will immediately see a drop in U.S. players moving to abroad to Europe. Because then all of a sudden, an American player is getting put up against a European player who's probably cheaper to acquire. It's cheaper for a German club to go down the road and get another German player than it is for them to go and sign an American player. So right now the circumstances are favorable for Americans going to Germany. American passports have a special position in Germany in respect of getting work permits. So that's a big plus factor. For example, an 18-year-old American cannot go to England and sign for an English club because he won't get a work permit unless he's playing for the senior national team of the U.S. So England is out for 99.9% of all American players at 18 years old. So therefore, Germany is a desirable destination, and America is a desirable country to source talent from. But as soon as the market dynamics change and the financial dynamics change, then you're going to see a drop. And the drop in players is then going to impact on the national team's ability to have the strongest possible pool of developed young players at the highest level.
Absolutely fascinating. And so if you're a young American player right now and you have an opportunity in Germany, this is the time to do it while the soil is tilled before, you know, obviously the compensation rules and things change. So it's absolutely fascinating.
No, exactly.
The way you just described it.
But the important thing is, Glenn, that's not to say that I'm not, me personally, it's not to say that I'm against clubs being compensated for developing young players. Of course I believe that. I used to be a club owner myself previously. But my suggestion when I spoke to Sunil Gulati about this, I said, Sunil, they shouldn't be chasing the training and development compensation and creating a barrier to entry for the young Americans to Europe. What they should be really pushing for is a bigger payment of the solidarity percentage that then gets paid. Because, you know, there's two payments, Glenn, that get made in professional soccer. In the first stage, there's the training and development compensation that you pay a club to. You pay a club for signing, for when the player signs his first professional contract. You have to go pay a certain amount of clubs that the player has played for in his youth. Now that formula is pretty expensive, okay, when you're making an international transfer. The second thing is, between the ages, I think it is of 21 and 28, somewhere in that range, 10% of all transfer revenue when a player gets sold, so the player sold for $1 million, 10% is held back of the transfer amount, or 5%, I think it's 5 or 10%, and that amount then is again divided amongst all the clubs that he's previously played for. So my point is this. Don't go and charge on the way in because you're going to stop deals getting done. Rather, give the player the chance to succeed. And when he has succeeded, then share in a greater percentage than what the current percentage is. That's what I believe, because then clubs look at this and they say, well, I don't mind paying for somebody that's made the grade. I don't mind it. But on the other hand, if they've got to pay on the way in and they've got to take a risk on somebody who might never make it, well, that's then a different matter, and that's when players start getting lost and opportunities in their career start getting lost.
So it's an opportunity killer in a way.
100%. And I think that the group of clubs chasing this with U.S. soccer have completely missed the point of the whole exercise. And I think that that U.S. soccer would actually do well to look at this and say, we can't afford for less of our players to be have the chance to go to Europe to develop at the highest level and ultimately come back and represent our country as better educated, better developed young men.
Is it fair to say then that by not adopting that idea and policy, you are actually hurting player development, aren't you?
Well, if you go down that route, then for sure you're actually in the bigger picture of the selected few that can make it in Europe, you are potentially closing doors for them.
Yeah, you're stunting opportunity, right?
100%. And for me, what I can't understand why it's never been challenged in a legal perspective. You got a kid who signs up with his family for a club at 12 years old, naively just wanting to play soccer for the sake of playing soccer because he loves the game. And as it turns out, in the next 3-4 years, he turns into a pretty good player. And then all of a sudden he thinks, well, maybe I can make a career of this. And then he reaches 18 and he wants to go to Europe, and suddenly there's a price tag of $300,000 around his head. Before, in training and development compensation, that must be payable before he can have the opportunity to go play in Europe. It's crazy. It's a complete restraint of trade for a young man. I just can't believe that rule hasn't been challenged more worldwide than, and obviously this must have been at the root of the original rulings that have been in American soccer, where the American courts must have realized that this was the case. You cannot restrain a kid of 18 from embarking on a professional career. You know,
fascinating stuff. He's Rob Moore, the managing director of On Target Football Consultants, and this last couple of minutes is going to be an eye opener for a lot of people. Back to Christian Pulisic and Dortmund. How did the decision become made to have Christian's father sort of accompany him over there? Because we hear that a lot, and obviously that would be a very steadying influence for a young man. How did that all come about? And, you know, just kind of shed a little light on that maybe, Rob.
Yeah, well, Mark was over there with Christian for the early stages, I think, from when he was, well, at 16 years old till about, when was it? It was actually just till January this year. So Christian would have been 18 then. So that was obviously a tremendous benefit for him, to have his dad there with him. And you know, because it's also tough, you know. I mean, you see millions of people see the match on Saturday, and the player hit the back of the net, and 85,000 people go crazy, and all the headlines in the media, and you think, you know, this is a lovely life, and this is easy, you know. But it's the tough days, you know, when you come home in February and it's dark at 3 o'clock, and it's snowing, and you're injured, or you've been dropped, or you haven't had things haven't gone as you would have wanted them to go in the last month. And suddenly, home seems like a long way away, you know. And it's always good in that kind of situation if you can have your parents with you. And like Christian had that benefit, he was very fortunate that to have Mark with him. So that was a very important part of his settling down and his success as well.
So here in Major League Soccer, and I did want to kind of relate something to you, because Christian was the perfect messenger to remind people that the 16 to 18-year age time period is so vital to accelerating player development and, you know, just garnering everything you can organically at that stage with proper training and moving a player's development forward. I don't think there's any question that in Major League Soccer, we have a real difficult time getting a 16 or a 17 or 17, 18, 19, 20-year-olds on the field in the league. And we sometimes, during commentary on broadcasts, are talking about players being young at 21 and 22, and we know that's not the case in Europe, young as 17, 18, 19. Do you think Major League Soccer needs...
Well, Rob, listen, this has been absolutely fascinating. I just want to extend the invitation. We'd love to have you on the show again to continue this discussion because there's so much to discuss. But I think it was a great opportunity for not only myself, my listeners, all to learn something and kind of get a little bit more of an understanding of kind of what happens in the global world of youth soccer and player development and then on to the professional level. So all I can say is thank you so much for coming on here today and enlightening all of us.
Pleasure, Glenn. My pleasure.
All right, that's Rob Moore from London, the Managing Director of On Target Football Consulting. All right, so that'll do it for Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 here. Just a quick programming note. We will be on the air next Tuesday and Wednesday at 7 o'clock Central Time. So join us. We will get it going here in 2019. Thanks for all your support in 2018. For producer Harrison, Victor Ariza, I'm Glenn Davis. Until next Tuesday at 7 Central, remember, Soccer Matters.